Without a doubt, effective mentoring relationships are incredibly valuable to the development of a junior officer's career and for the organization. Mentoring as leader development in our profession takes many forms. This week, we take a deep dive into the concept of mentoring to shed some light on the subject. In the huddle with us today, we interview Lieutenant Colonel Ray Kimball, the director of the Center for the Advancement of Leader Development and Organizational Learning at West Point, and author of the Army Officer's Guide to Mentoring. This is the Leaders Huddle Podcast, number 9, Mentoring Relationships as a Tool for Leader Development. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Captain David Wirt, your host for today's episode. Our guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Ray Kimball, Director of the Center for the Advancement of Leader Development and Organizational Learning, or CALDL, at West Point, and author of the Army's Officer Guide to Mentoring. Sir, welcome into the huddle. Please fill us in on your current day job here in official role at West Point.
Thanks, Dave. It's really great to be here, and thanks for the opportunity to speak to your audience. It is a great honor for me to be the director of CALDL. We really have two functions here in the center. The first is that we steward online communities for junior officers, the company command and platoon leader forums, that allow them to connect with one another in conversation about the profession. Through those communities, then, our second function is that we sponsor and craft new learning technologies and leader development techniques for West Point and the Army as a whole, such as this podcast. And what's really important about both of those functions is that they center around creating world-class content in a professional context that ultimately makes both individuals and organizations more effective.
Sir, thanks for filling in that introduction, and we'll certainly touch on concepts of distributed learning and e-mentoring later on in the interview. Before we go in depth into mentoring and the key takeaways from the book, I wanted to ask if you could fill our listeners in on why you chose the topic of mentoring for your research.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that they say when you're doing a doctorate is that you have to pick something that you're passionate about, because otherwise you'll never get through the doctorate. And for me, I'm very passionate about mentoring because I've been incredibly fortunate to have some really amazing mentors throughout the course of my career. It is not an exaggeration to say that without my mentors, I would not be sitting here today in this position. And as I started to get into my doctoral work and started to do some preliminary investigation into mentoring, what I was really shocked to find was that although mentoring is part of Army doctrine for leadership, that no one had ever really done an in-depth study into what Army mentoring actually looks like in practice. And so it was really a tremendous honor for me to be able to do my research, interview real Army officers about their practices as both a mentor and a protege, and try and capture that in a way that was accessible to the community as a whole.
Sir, in your opinion, why does mentoring matter in the Army, and specifically, why does mentoring matter for our junior officers and NCOs, those listeners in the Leaders Huddle community?
You know, mentoring matters because all of us have an obligation to develop leaders and develop members of the profession, and mentoring is a great way to do that. It is not the only way to do that, certainly, but it is a great way to do that and to meet individual needs. We state it as part of our doctrine. We state it as things that are supposed to be done, and yet when you look at some of the most recent leader development surveys, one of the things that you find is that develop others is consistently the lowest rated category in those surveys, and has been for several years. So I think that suggests that while we recognize the importance of mentoring, we could certainly do a better job of mentoring and of making sure that people have access to great mentoring throughout their careers.
Sir, I've seen the same that same research or survey that you mentioned. And that's honestly some of the motivation behind doing a podcast and distributed medium like this. That's where I found a lot of my own professional development on the side was through listening to podcasts as a junior officer. So I want to specifically touch on the difference between mentoring, coaching, and counseling. They're all mentioned in FM 622 as forms of leader development and times used interchangeably. Can you elaborate for our listeners on the differences between mentoring, coaching, and counseling in the Army context?
Dave, that's a really great question, and I'm really glad that you asked it, because to be candid, it is one of my pet peeves, is the misuse of these terms. We really, as an Army, one of the things that I found is that we really like to use mentoring as a catch-all for any kind of individualized development. And I think we do that for the right reasons. We do that because we recognize the power of mentoring, we recognize the importance of it, and we want to, I think, subconsciously give ourselves credit for it. But at the same time, it's really important to differentiate between them. So we'll start out with mentoring. And simply put, mentoring is the voluntary and mutual developmental relationship between a person of greater experience and a person of lesser experience. The key terms there are voluntary and mutual. As I tell people many times, if it's not voluntary, it's not mentoring. That doesn't mean it's not developmental. That doesn't mean that it's not important for individual development. But we shouldn't categorize it as mentoring, because mentoring comes with a certain set of expectations. Many times what I find is when people say mentoring, they often mean coaching. And coaching is simply the pairing of a senior and a junior individual in order to help the junior individual better develop their skills and better develop their abilities. One of the key different distinctions and differences between mentoring and coaching is, one, this distinction of voluntary and mutual. Coaching does not have to be voluntary. An individual can be assigned a coach specifically in order to develop and build out their capabilities. But mentoring is inherently voluntary. It has to be both folks mutually making a commitment on their own. The other thing that I think is really important to bring out in terms of the difference between mentoring and coaching is that frequently in coaching, all of the benefits accrue to the junior person in that relationship, which makes sense. That's what it's there for. The coach is there to give and impart benefits. You receive those benefits and you move on. One of the things that I think people don't appreciate about mentoring is that in a mentoring relationship, the benefits accrue to both the mentor and to the protege. And for instance, that's why I'm very careful about using the term protege instead of the term mentee, because mentee implies that you're receive only. And instead, it's important to recognize that a mentoring relationship has co-equal actors, a mentor and a protege. So that's the distinction there between mentoring and coaching, this idea of being voluntary and mutual on one hand and potentially more directive on the other hand. Counseling then is a third element that really functions within the space of a chain of command relationship. So counseling happens between a supervisor and a subordinate. And really it is that supervisor giving that subordinate focused development and focused areas in order to be able to work on. And again, counseling is normally one way, although depending on the specific conduct of the counseling, it can certainly be two-way in terms of the subordinate giving the superior feedback. But again, there is no voluntary and mutual aspect here. We don't get to pick our subordinates. We are assigned our subordinates, but we still have an obligation to conduct counseling with them. So all three of these should be seen as components along a broader continuum of individual, personal, professional development. None of them is inherently superior to another, and all of them should be seen as having utility at different points and at different times in a person's career.
Sir, in your response, you built a natural segue to my follow-up question, and you mentioned several times that mentoring is inherently voluntary. Why do you think voluntary mentoring may be more effective than a mandated, structured relationship we see in some organizations where a new employee or onboarded employee is assigned a mentor?
So again, this goes back to, and I'll tackle kind of the second part of your statement first. If you are assigned an individual and you didn't get any say in picking that individual, that's not a mentor. Doesn't mean that they're not valuable for that individual's development, but call them what they are. They're a coach. They're a counselor. That helps understand some of the dividing lines a little bit better, because somebody that you're directly assigned, that you don't have any choice in picking, you may not be as comfortable opening up to them. And this, I think, really gets to the key of why it's so important that mentoring is voluntary, because mentoring relationships at their core are intimate relationships. You are sharing things with this individual that you would not necessarily share with other people in your workplace. And let me be clear, that holds for both the mentor as well as the protege. A relationship where only the protege is the one opening up about themselves, sharing intimate secrets about themselves, is not a mentoring relationship. The best mentoring relationships have mentors that do that as well, because when mentors do that, when mentors open up, when they share intimate ideas, it helps the protege understand that this is part of what's expected as a mentor, and it helps the protege reframe and have some of their own focus. So I think it's really, I think it's really critical that we understand that voluntary is an essential component of mentoring. And I think it's also why it's important that we get conversant of the other areas that you talked about, of counseling and coaching, so that we are comfortable developing people through those mechanisms as well, even though they themselves are not voluntary.
Sir, in your book, you pose a interesting question, that being that question being, and I quote, "Isn't mentoring just good leadership, and why does it need its own field of research?" Can you explain how the outcomes between leadership and mentorship differ, or and also how they complement one another?
So I'll tackle the complementary side of it first. I think mentorship is absolutely a great complement to leadership. And really, I think the main point, that aside from obviously the whole continuum of professional development, the more you develop yourself, the more capable you will be as a leader. But one thing that I would specifically zero in on that I think mentorship helps feed into leadership is that mentorship really helps you develop empathy, which I will tell you is something that we don't necessarily stress as an Army, but I think is something that is underappreciated as a component of leadership, is the ability to feel empathy towards subordinates, towards peers, and towards seniors all alike. I think being able to have empathy towards those groups and better understand what they're feeling and what they're sensing makes you a better and makes you a more effective leader. And I think mentoring is effective in helping develop empathic ability, because I think mentoring, the fact that you're opening yourself up to this other person, the fact that they're opening up to you and you're gauging how to take in what they're saying, really helps build your empathic practice and helps you be more sensitive to the perceptions of others. So I think that's one area where leadership and mentorship really complement each other. As far as the differences, I think it's important to really have a distinction between leadership and mentorship, because I think it's important for people not to feel pressure that in addition to being a leader for this individual, I have to be their mentor as well. Again, these are intimate relationships that you're talking about, and I don't think that it's feasible for a leader to have that depth of a relationship with every individual that he or she is charged with leading and developing. That's not to say, interestingly enough, that leaders cannot be mentors to their subordinates. I'm going to go on a little bit of a sidetrack here, but I think it does address the question. One of the things that I felt strongly about coming into my research was that I felt very strongly that superiors could not be mentors to their subordinates while they were in that chain of command relationship. And I felt that way because of the definition of mentoring, voluntary and mutual. We get assigned our subordinates, we don't get to pick them, so therefore it can't be inherently voluntary and mutual. Well, what I discovered during the course of my research was that the vast majority of the people that I interviewed all had relationships with superiors that they characterized as mentoring. And I pushed back. I said, "Are you really sure about this? Let's talk about the definition." And every single one of them, when I pushed back on me and said, "No, I really feel strongly that this was a mentoring relationship. It was intimate in a way that I didn't have with my other leaders. It stayed, that relationship sustained itself after the chain of command relationship ended. We continued to stay in touch." So that was really insightful for me in thinking about how some of those leadership experiences can actually go deeper and become mentorship experiences. I just don't think that we should set a standard that every leader is a mentor to all of their subordinates, because I just don't think that that's something that the vast majority of our leaders have the personal capacity to do. I will be very candid with you, I didn't have that personal capacity. And it's not just because of my capacity, it's because of the people that we lead. Not all of them are ready for various levels of mentoring at the same time in their career. So the lieutenants that I led as a troop commander were not necessarily ready for me to be their mentor at that point in their career. They needed to mature a little bit more, or I needed to mature a little bit more before we could have that kind of mentoring relationship. So that's why I think that distinction between leadership and mentorship is really important to make.
Sir, I feel like I'm taking incredible notes and learning a lot just from this interview after reading your book. And I want to highlight a couple of things. You touched on the topic of developmental readiness, and that's a conversation I have with my cadets here a lot. And they ask the question about trying to reach into and develop their classmates. And I feel like as a protege, you need to have a sense of developmental readiness and the humility to really learn from a mentor relationship. And I think your research as far as having a mentor that's also in your chain of command is congruent with my experience from one of the field grade officers I learned the most from. And I believe truly he could be my mentor and also my boss, because he, in his counseling statements and his conversations, he showed that sense of empathy, that he really cared. And he was, I still maintain contact with him today, helped write letters of recommendation for future career opportunities, and I still consider him someone I reach out to for advice.
Dave, that's a great point. And one thing that I wanted to bring out in response to your statement, because I can kind of sense the grinding of teeth of people who are listening to this podcast and saying, well, if a leader is a mentor to some of his or her subordinates, doesn't that mean that there's unequal treatment going on? Doesn't that mean that leader is showing favoritism? And that's absolutely a valid concern. And one of the things, and when I raised that question with my participants, one of the points that they consistently made was there was no favoritism in the sense that leader was committed to the same level of leader development, the same baseline level of leader development for all of their subordinates. So they made sure that all of their subordinates got that minimum level of leader development that they needed in order to be able to thrive in the position and in order to be able to prepare themselves for the next position. But they really emphasized that there were just some cases where the leader was able to make a deeper and more meaningful individual connection with some of the people in the chain of command. Sometimes that's a focus of background. Sometimes that's a focus of individual abilities. Sometimes it's just dumb luck. But all of my participants really stressed when I raised the question of favoritism with them that they felt very strongly, as one of them specifically said, I'll quote them, "What he did for me, he would have done for any of the individuals in our company. It was just that I had a deeper connection with him."
Yeah, I think it is important when you're in those leadership positions to maintain a sense of objectivity to your subordinates when it comes purely to evaluation time and having specific performance metrics. And so again, I want to transition a little bit to the topic of e-mentoring, because I think that's gaining some attention, specifically through mediums such as Skype, closed Facebook groups, mastermind groups, and even using Snapchat as a form of, it may be debatable if that's really a form of mentoring, but I've seen some other podcasters actually use Snapchat. So I'm interested on your thoughts on both the advantages and some of the potential pitfalls of e-mentoring.
Sure. So just to start with, just to give kind of a broad definition of e-mentoring, it is mentoring engagements that happen in modalities that are other than face-to-face. So it may be over the phone, it may be over text messages, it may be over some of the mechanisms that you mentioned, but basically what it is it is non-face-to-face engagements. I think by far the biggest advantage of e-mentoring, especially when it comes to Army officers, is the ability to sustain mentoring relationships when the two of you are no longer in the same geographic area. And that's a constant concern for us, right? You meet someone face-to-face, you form a great relationship with them, and then almost like clockwork, it's time for one or both of you to PCS and move away. So the great thing about e-mentoring is it gives you that mechanism to sustain that relationship, even if after you've moved away, even if you may be on opposite time zones of the world from one another, that e-mentoring can be an opportunity for that to be sustained. The other nice thing about e-mentoring that is both an advantage and a disadvantage is that e-mentoring inherently leaves a trail. So when you're conducting e-mentoring over email, or you're conducting e-mentoring through Skype, or you're conducting through Skype chat, or you're conducting it through Facebook chat, those messages get left behind and you can go back and look at them later. So it's a great opportunity for reflective practice in that you can go back and you can take a look at it and say, I wonder what she was trying to say to me in that earlier. And you dig in and you go, oh, that's what he meant. Now I understand that better. And it just gets to the fact that we're not always ready to receive what our mentors, or for that matter, what our protégés are putting out. But when we can go back and look at it and reflect on it, I think it makes it more powerful. The third advantage, I think, is it just recognizes that that's where our mentors and our protégés live right now, right? We are increasingly tied to our phone. We are increasingly tied to our computer. That is just the reality of modern existence. So why not be able to reach people where they are? The disadvantages, I think we have to be candid about the disadvantages as well, and how we counter them. And sorry, there's one more advantage that I want to get to, which is the final advantage that I would bring out of e-mentoring is that it can allow what researchers call a networked approach to mentoring, which is where you bring multiple mentors to bear on a problem when you're a protege. So as a protege, because I do still consider myself a protege, I still have mentors out there. If I have a particularly difficult problem, I can reach out to multiple mentors at the same time and say, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? They'll independently come back with feedback to me, and then I can weigh that feedback one against another and usually come up with some kind of approach that's a synthesis of my mentor's suggestions. As far as the disadvantages go, I do think we need to be honest with ourselves about some of the disadvantages and how to counter them. The first is that when you're talking about non-face-to-face communication, you lose all of the subtle cues that we get through body language, facial expression, body expression. And we've all had that moment where we've sent an email that we totally meant to have one tone, and it was totally received in a different tone and not necessarily in a good way. And we've all had that experience, and we all understand how damaging that can be to a relationship. So we need to understand when we're conducting e-mentoring, we need to be very deliberate about our word choice and about our tone, and be willing to follow up on a note and say, hey, I want to make sure that you understood kind of the tone that I was trying to put on that. Again, that speaks to open and honest communication between mentors and protégés. The second goes back to something that I talked about before, which is that e-mentoring inherently leaves a paper trail. And we really, this really goes to the trust, the level of trust in a mentoring relationship, and that understanding between the mentor and between the protege that mentoring communications are not to be shared unless it's explicitly allowed by both parties. There has to be that sense of privacy. There has to be that sense of trust. Because the first time that mentoring email gets shared without a protege's permission, you have, I think, irreparably damaged that relationship because you have breached that trust. So I think one of the ways that we can best counter that is by not just thinking of e-mentoring as something that stands on its own, but rather than e-mentoring as being part of a continuum of switching between face-to-face and e-mentoring, and being willing to switch between those two. My personal experience has been that it works much better if there is at least an initial face-to-face meeting and engagement in a mentoring relationship, and then it can branch out to e-mentoring from there. Precisely because you get a sense of that person's tone, you get a sense of that person's persona that then comes across better in e-mentoring. The literature, though, makes very clear on this that it is possible and viable to have a completely e-mentoring relationship. It just requires a little more deliberate practice and a little more reflective thought to be put into it for that relationship to be successful.
So earlier in the interview, you specifically talked a lot about the benefits that both protégés and mentors can get from a relationship. So I have two questions as we are closing up in the end of the interview. What responsibility does the protégé have in a mentoring relationship, and how about the responsibilities of the mentor themselves?
Sure. So I think the responsibilities actually have I think there's a lot of similarity between the responsibilities of the protégé and the mentor. One that I think is shared between them is the requirement to be willing to be open and intimate about what you're feeling, about what your needs are, and about where you stand. And part of that, frankly, is being willing to say, I understand what you're laying down, but it's not working for me right now. And that has to be that comes from both the mentor and from the protege. The mentor has to be willing to say to the protege, I understand what you're saying. Well, I'm hearing what you're saying, but I'm not understanding what you're saying. It's too far outside of my frame of reference. I need you to give me a little bit more. I need you to dig a little bit deeper. That can be really hard, especially for mentors to do, because we're the senior person in the relationship, right? We're supposed to be all-seeing, all-knowing. And so part of that comes back to the humility that you mentioned earlier of being that humble leader, being that humble servant leader, and saying, I really need you to give me more here. I'm just not able to respond. The second thing is the requirement that both sides have to respect the trust and the privacy of the relationship. Both sides have to understand that this is a private, intimate relationship that is sharing things that are not necessarily to be shared with other parties unless there's specific elements. One, I think, unique aspect that the mentor has in the relationship is because the mentor is the senior and more mature individual, the mentor has a real and important responsibility to recognize when the relationship may be getting too intimate, when the relationship may be on the verge of crossing professional boundaries, and keeping that relationship within professional boundaries. Obviously, this is primarily a concern in cross-gender relationships, but it can equally be a concern in single-gender relationships. We understand what the professional boundaries are of conduct, and it is important precisely because mentoring relationships are intimate relationships that we not allow those relationships to cross those professional boundaries. Because once we do, it becomes something else entirely and can't be considered a developmental relationship anymore.
So as I listen to some of your responses, and specifically for question five on e-mentoring, You're sort of touching on the subject without explicitly stating it. And in the coaching dimension, we would consider that contracting. At the start of a relationship, we sort of set the boundaries. Coaching sometimes is time-bound. Mentoring does not necessarily have to be time-bound. But contracting between the protege and mentor, I think, would be important to establish those boundaries, and also to really have that explicit line of trust that what is said when it's written in a e-mentoring relationship is only shared unless otherwise stated. So wrapping up, sir, I have sort of a macro type of question. You write in the book that research shows mentors' own experiences as protege was the most important factor in deciding to be a mentor themselves. So with that in mind, and understanding the importance of keeping mentoring a voluntary experience, how can we cultivate a culture of mentorship in organizations, or in other words, how can we scale mentorship to a larger audience?
So this is something that I've thought a lot about because I felt really strongly as I was identifying these experiences. One of the things that people consistently said to me as they described their mentoring experiences was, I feel like I'm unique in this regard in that I've had great mentoring experiences, but I know so many officers who haven't. And that's painful professionally for me to hear that, because again, it goes back to the thing that we both mentioned at the beginning, that developing others is a consistently low-rated aspect. So there are really three things that I think are important for the dissemination and the improvement of great mentoring practice in the Army. The first is that I think it's important when we think about trying to help people build mentoring relationships that we think about that in terms of mentoring spaces, not mentoring faces. And let me explain what I mean by that. All too often we have this sense of, oh, I have this individual and I need to go out and find the perfect mentor for her. I need to go out and find the perfect protege for him. The problem is, we can't possibly know all of the developmental aspects of what a person needs, either as a protege or as a mentor. So whatever mechanism we use for that is going to be inherently imperfect. Instead, what I would suggest is concentrate on identifying those spaces within your organization that naturally lend themselves to mentoring practice. And what I mean by that is, what are those spaces where people naturally gather just over the course of their day and have candid professional conversations? Because once you identify and support those spaces, what you're doing is you're creating a space for people to have those professional conversations and to identify like-minded aspects of one another. That then leads to deeper conversations. One of the things that I'm proudest of is that many of my participants in my study pointed to the Company Command and Platoon Leader Forums as spaces where they met people that they saw as like-minded, that they then established mentoring relationships as a result of that. So in this particular idea, it wasn't that the forums were mentoring spaces themselves, because they don't lend themselves to that kind of intimate one-on-one professional conversation, but it helped people identify people who could be great mentors and who could be great protégés for them. So that's what I mean when I say mentoring spaces, not mentoring faces. The second is, I think we need to be very deliberate and very reflective about how gender and ethnicity figure into our mentoring practice. The hard reality is, if all of your mentors and all of your protégés look just like you, you need to think very deliberately about whether you're opening yourself to the full range of mentoring practices that are out there and whether you're making yourself accessible to people who don't look like you. I don't have any easy answers on this, because it's tough and it's knotty, but it's something that I would ask all leaders to think about very carefully, is who are my mentors, who are my protégés, and who could my mentors and protégés be? The final thing that I think is really important is to be very open and honest in talking about your mentoring practice. My challenge to everybody out there is, think about how many times you've actually heard someone say, "Well, my mentor shared this with me," or "my protege shared this with me." And I'm willing to bet it's probably relatively few times. Then I want you to think about, how many times have you said, "My mentor said this to me," "my protege said this to me"? And odds are it's probably fewer than the number of times that you've heard other people say it. And so one challenge that I guess I would want to leave your listeners with is, be more open in sharing what you're getting out of your mentoring practice. That doesn't mean that you have to identify who the mentor was, who the protege was. That's going to be on an individual basis, based on the privacy of mentoring relationships. But I would absolutely encourage people to be more deliberate about saying, instead of saying, "Oh, hey, I found this great technique," say, "My mentor shared this great idea with me," or "My protege shared with me how she had grappled with this specific idea, and it was really insightful for me, and it triggered new ideas."
So that was incredibly insightful. And as you're mentioning mentoring spaces versus faces, or those areas where those conversations happen, I continually get reminded of the picture that the company command team uses, as far as the officers or the soldiers on top of a Humvee with a map and talking. And I found myself doing that all the time this past summer with the cadets during cadet basic training, and it was just so rewarding to say, "Hey, gather around, we're going to have a talk about why we failed at this range." And that could be mentoring or coaching, but it was just those informal opportunities that happened to become formal, and you could see that they were a sponge just soaking everything up. And so as we wrap up, I really want to thank you for your time. I really encourage everyone to get out, and they can download the book right on the company command forum page.
Absolutely. So the book itself is available to members of the company command and platoon leader forums. For Army officers, Army NCOs, and Army civilians who are interested in a copy of the book but are not members of the forums, they can go to my academia.edu page and send me a request through that, or you can just send me a request on enterprise email, and I'm happy to send you a copy of the book for free. That book was done on Army time. It belongs to the Army, and I feel very strongly that it should be a free Army resource. For those who prefer a hard copy or a Kindle version, it is available on Amazon for a small fee.
And sir, thanks again for allowing me to be part of the company command team. This podcast as a medium has been really rewarding. And obviously in future episodes, we'd love to have you back and talk about further topics about mentoring and coaching and some other further research you guys are working on.
Dave, absolutely. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for the great work that you do in this podcast. It is really exciting to see the impact that it's already having on Army leaders, and I'd be honored to be a part of it again any way that's helpful for all of you.
This wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. In the next episode, we focus on PRT, specifically the fundamentals of an effective physical readiness training program, so you can't afford to miss it. You can connect with us at iTunes, and we are also on the Google Play platform. If you like the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and leave a comment on future topics of interest. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss, so please leave a comment on iTunes or through the various Caldwell-sponsored Facebook and Twitter feeds. Until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.